The warning came on the wind, though Ilse could not say how she knew it was a warning until the birds had gone silent and the wheat stood perfectly still, as though holding its breath. She was in the yard, gathering eggs from the nesting boxes, her fingers sticky with straw and warm shell, when the stillness reached her. It was not the ordinary quiet of a farm at midday. The chickens would still cluck, the goat would bleat for grain, the wind would comb through the wheat with its familiar restless fingers. This was different. This was the hollow holding its tongue. Ilse straightened slowly, one egg cradled against her chest like a small, absurd heart. She looked north toward the road. The air above the broken waystone shimmered, a thin heat haze in the cold, and beyond that, a line of dust rose from the flat land where the pilgrim's road met the baron's track. Horses, many horses. She dropped the egg. It did not break, rolled once, twice, into the straw end. She did not pick it up. She turned and ran for the cottage, her boots slipping on the wet grass, her hands already forming the words she would need to speak to the villagers. Jaren was inside, sharpening his staff against a whetstone, the rhythmic scrape of rock on wood filling the small space. He looked up when she burst through the door, his expression shifting from concentration to something sharper, something that recognized danger before she had spoken it. "How many?" he asked. Ilse did not answer immediately. She went to the window, pressed her face to the glass, and counted. 6, maybe 8. The dust cloud told her more than her eyes could resolve. Soldiers, not riders. The baron's men, come to finish what Torvin had started. "More than Torvin brought," she said. "Maybe a dozen." Jaren set the whetstone down. He did not look afraid. He looked tired, the way a man looks when he has been carrying something heavy for a long time and knows it is about to get heavier. "They will want the stones," he said. "They will want whatever the baron tells them to want. That is not the problem." Ilse turned from the window. Her voice was flat, practical, the way she spoke when she was deciding between two bad options. "The problem is what happens when they take the stones. What happens when the road opens completely?" Jaren was quiet for a moment. Then he said, "The dark will pour through." "I know what will happen, Jaren. I need you to listen to me." She crossed the room in 3 strides and gripped his arm, hard enough that he looked at her properly. "I am going to gather the villagers, all of them, those who can walk, those who can carry a pitchfork or a torch or a stone. We will stand on the road. We will stand where the waystones are. And we will tell them that no one takes a stone from Harrow's End without walking over our bodies first." Jaren studied her face. His eyes were dark, unreadable, but she felt the weight of his assessment the way he measured her resolve, the way a smith measures metal before the hammer falls. "They will have swords," he said. "So will we," Ilse said. "Not swords, pitchforks, scythes, stones, but we will have something they do not." "And what is that?" Ilse pressed her palm flat against the wall between them, right where the stone met timber, and Jaren felt it, the faint vibration, the low hum that ran through everything, through the earth and the stones and the bones of the house. The road sang through the ground itself. He felt it. His eyes widened. He understood. Jaren nodded slowly. "Then go. I will stay here with Alara." "No," the word came out sharper than she intended. "She stays in the cellar, with the jars. If things go badly, if they come for the cottage, she hides among the preserves, and she does not come out until I call her. You go with me." Jaren opened his mouth to protest, then closed it. He understood, finally, that this was not a negotiation. Ilse Vane did not negotiate when the road was at stake. She acted. She left him with that, grabbed her cloak from the peg by the door, and stepped outside into the terrible stillness. The village of Harrow's End was not much of a village at all. 12 houses huddled along the lower slope of the hill, clustered around a single well and a church whose roof had collapsed during the last storm and whose priest had not been replaced since Uncle Eamon died. The people who lived here were farmers, mostly. Smallholders. People who had inherited land from parents who had inherited it from their parents, just as Ilse had inherited this farm. They were the sort of people who mended each other's roofs and shared seed potatoes, and did not ask questions about why a woman lived alone at the top of the hill with a dead husband and a sick child and a road nobody walked anymore. She had bought their wheat when her own fields failed. She had helped old man Hester haul hay when his back gave out. She had buried 3 children from this village in the small plot behind the ruined church. They knew her, too. They knew she did not suffer fools. They knew she kept her word. They could not have guessed the truth she carried alone. that she was the keeper of a road that held back something worse than winter, worse than war, worse than the Baron's taxes and his foremen and his greed. She started at the well, because everyone passed the well. A few women were there with their buckets, chatting in low voices about the weather and the price of salt. They fell silent as she approached, not because they feared her, though some of them did, but because they recognized the set of her shoulders, the tightness of her jaw, the way her eyes scanned the horizon like a hawk scanning a field for mice. "Listen to me," Il said. Her voice carried easily in the still air. "The Baron's men are coming. They have soldiers. They mean to take the waystones." A woman named Marna, young and wide-eyed, dropped her bucket. It landed with a hollow clang. "Take the stones? Why?" Ilse's tone was flat, factual, the way she explained why the roof needed repairing or why the goat had to be slaughtered before winter. "Because the Baron wants them for his hall. Because Torvin told him they are valuable. Because he does not know what they are." She understood the danger, and she would not let them take them. Another woman, older, squinted at her. "What happens if they take them anyway?" Ilse looked at her. She considered lying. She considered saying something simple and clean, something that would make the fear manageable. But the villagers of Harrow's End deserved the truth, even if it terrified them. Silence. The kind of silence that falls when a room full of people realizes they are smaller than they thought they were. Silence. The kind of silence that falls when a room full of people realizes they are smaller than they thought they were. Marna was crying silently, her mouth pressed into a thin white line. Bess stared at Ilse with an expression that was not quite belief, not quite disbelief, but something in between the way a man looks at a ghost he is not sure he wants to believe in. "You're serious," Bess said finally. Ilse said nothing. She reached out, took Bess's wrist in both hands, and squeezed until the older woman winced, not hard enough to hurt, but hard enough to feel the iron in her grip. Then she turned toward the road and began walking. Bess nodded slowly, then she turned and walked toward her house. She came back with a scythe, the blade gleaming dully in the gray light, and she held it at her side like a weapon. "I'll stand with you," she said. That was all it took. One woman with a scythe became three women with pitchforks. Two men who had been mending a fence nearby dropped their tools and picked up wooden stakes. An old man named Corwin, whose hands shook too much for farming but whose eyes were still sharp, dragged a rusted musket from the shed behind his house and pointed it uncertainly at the ground. Ilse watched them assemble, her heart doing something complicated and fierce and terrified all at once. These were not soldiers. They were farmers. People who could not fight a real battle. People who would break under the weight of steel and discipline and the roar of men who had killed before. But they were hers, and they were standing on the right side of the road. "How many can we get?" she asked Bess. Bess was already moving from house to house, calling out, urging, shouting. 30, she said after a moment. "Maybe 30. Some of the families have fled north already since the sickness started. The rest are hiding in their homes, hoping the soldiers will pass them by." "Hope will not stop them." "No, but a pitchfork might." Ilse almost smiled, almost. Instead, she turned north and began walking toward the road, the 30 villagers trailing behind her like a ragged army, armed with garden tools and desperation, and the stubborn, irrational courage of people who have nothing left to lose except the ground beneath their feet. The pilgrim's road stretched ahead, cracked and overgrown, disappearing into the mist that clung to the hollow like a living thing. The first waystone stood at the edge of the field, tall and dark and humming with a frequency so low it was felt rather than heard. Ilse placed her hand against it. Cold, solid, patient. Behind her, the villagers gathered. They did not speak. They did not need to. The stones were humming louder now, responding to the presence of so many people, responding to the fear and the anger and the fierce, desperate love that held them together. Ilse looked north again. The dust cloud had grown. The horses were closer. She could see the flash of armor, the glint of spear tips, the dark shape of the Baron's banner snapping in the wind. They were here. She turned to face them, her hand still on the stone, her heart still beating, and she waited. The first soldier appeared over the rise, a dark figure against the gray sky, his horse picking its way carefully through the wet grass. Behind him, more soldiers. Behind them, Torvin, sitting on a chestnut mare, his face a mask of bored impatience, his hand resting casually on the pommel of his sword. He spotted Ilse standing on the road, surrounded by her ragged collection of farmers, and he smiled. It was not a kind smile. It was the smile of a man who has already won and is merely enjoying the view. "Mrs. Vane," he called, his voice carrying easily across the field. "What is this, a harvest festival?" Ilse did not smile back. She kept her hand on the waystone. She kept her voice level. "You are on private land, Torvin. Turn back." Torvin laughed. It was a short, sharp sound, like a whip cracking. "Private land? Mrs. Vane, the Baron owns this land. The Baron owns the road. The Baron owns the stones. You are a tenant farmer with a debt of 50 crowns and a very vivid imagination." "I owe the Baron nothing," Ilse said, "and I will not let you take the stones." Torvin's smile faded. His jaw tightened. For a moment, she saw something underneath the boredom, something cold and hard and utterly without mercy. It was the face of a man who had spent his life taking what others wanted him to take, who had never been told no and did not know what to do with the word. "Then we will take them from your body," he said softly. Ilse felt the villagers behind her shift, felt the sudden intake of breath, felt the fear ripple through them like a wave. But she did not move. She did not blink. She kept her hand on the stone and she kept her voice steady. "Try it," she said. The vibration faded, leaving the air heavy with the scent of ozone and wet stone.